going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Blackface, Ku Klux Klan robes, racial slurs, all in the news this week, all day, every day. It's hard enough for adults to digest these issues. But what about children? What do you tell them about racism? What should you tell them about racism? Well, joining me tonight to talk about these very important questions are Dr. Dana Williams, Interim Dean of the Howard University Graduate School and Professor of African American Literature, Dr. Jashawn Mance, Clinical Psychologist and Professor here at Howard University's Department of Psychology, and Dr. Jeff Menzie, Clinical Child Psychologist and Lead Consultant at Mind on the Matter. Lines are open. What do you think? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Let me start with you, Dr. Mance. A child asks you, what is blackface? Once you get over the shock of that child asking, how do you address that?
I think that's a great question. And initially, as you say, you get over the shock of the child asking, because I think it's really important as parents or as the adult to process how you feel, because it may be a trigger for you so that you can kind of delve into what the child's questions are, but not necessarily you don't need to shield your children because they are being exposed. So providing a response and that's age appropriate to them, to let them know that there's a history and that history has caused some hurt to others. And because of that, we're mindful of how we present ourselves. We're prideful in how we present ourselves. And when we see blackface, when we see that representation, it causes pain to others. And so we want to be mindful because we come from a proud history. So I think kind of making sure that we have balance in identifying and defining exactly what the child is asking about, and also giving some balance so that it is an opportunity to identify that, no, it's not right, but also what our strengths are.
You know, Dr. Mance mentioned what is age appropriate. Dr. Menzie, how hard do you go when you're talking about, let's say, a 10-year-old? And I know you're a father. So
yes.
How much filter do you apply to this kind of information about lynchings and Klan robes and the like?
Right. And that's a very, very important point that Dr. Mann brings up. And the question is important as well, because, you know, you do have to kind of censor it. I base my censorship on the disposition and personality of the child themselves. So you have some children that are very, very sensitive to the hurt, pain, and hardship experienced by others. You have very empathic children. And so you want to be careful of how much emotional trauma you introduce them to, because oftentimes when teaching our children about racism, we are running the risk of traumatizing them. We do it, you know, to kind of protect them from the insidious, erosive, and corrosive nature of racism. But at the same time, we got to be careful that we're not the ones traumatizing them by giving them the stories. And so, you know, you really have to gauge it based on the disposition of that child, which is very important. And as what Dr. Mann pointed out, you know, as parents, we've got to be able to gauge our own place and emotion around some of this stuff. And so what I recommend is that parents, you do your work. You go in and you study it. You process the emotion and feelings that you have, so that whenever the question does come up from a child, you are best prepared in the best position and the best disposition that you can muster up for yourself to respond accordingly.
Dr. Williams, how do you steel yourself to sit down and have this conversation? And should you talk to your children about this before they approach you?
I think so. I think you do try to be proactive about it as much as possible. And one of the ways I think that you can do that is to do exactly what Dr. Mance was suggesting. Talk about the great history that is related to overall African-American life or Africa and diaspora, I think it's critical that students and children and adults and everybody in the world alike be aware that there is a proud legacy and there's a proud history, one that you don't have to worry so much about, well, this has to be something negative, so I must come from a place that is dark. So I think the proactive, like advanced conversation is being real clear with students, with children, with adults, with our peers. We were talking about that a little bit earlier, like what are our peers asking us about different things, like how we handle this. So I think you have to be clear about it all the time that the legacy of Black people in this country does not begin with enslavement, is not tied exclusively to enslavement, that there is a presence before the moment of enslavement, and that there certainly was a history that predates enslavement. And I think that that gives children the opportunity to think about themselves in a larger context. So that long view is very different from this must be something bad, and do I come from people who are shamed or who have been shamed and who have only been oppressed? No, this is a very, very short period of time that we have experienced this comparatively.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about your children. How do you talk to them about racism? What should you be telling them about it? Lines are open. Give us a call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. David calling from Camp Springs. Thanks for calling, David. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Hal? Good evening to you and your panel of guests. I explained to my sons, I have two, and one is a teenager, he just graduated from high school, and the other one, he's a grown man. I explained to them at a young age that racism is still alive and very well right to this very day. It's more sugar-coated now. But now you see you have your government officials that have done these things in the past, and they're the very same ones that laugh in your face, knock on your door, and want you to get their vote. See, and it's sad that it's that way this very day. You know, we've come a long way as a people being brought into this country forcefully, and now we're still being forced with this blatant racism again. You know, you're going back to the civil rights movement and all the things that we've gone through, which I've come through, you know, I made it through the civil rights movement, and we're still dealing with these very same issues right to this very day. And it's sad. It's sad. But the main thing is, I don't want to hold you up, other people want to call too. We have got to educate our children at a young age the history of racism, the history of how we came to this country, our ancestors, and the things that were taken away from us, you know, as a people.
Yeah.
They've got to be educated at a young age, and it's not being done in the schools.
And thank you, David, which brings me to yet another point, because, you know, I have a daughter. She's here at Howard. She's 20. But when 12 Years a Slave came out, and David makes the point about school, we were watching the movie, and as we were watching, and she can be, you know, somewhat vocal, and she was going, oh, yes, I remember that from the book. And I think that it is important for parents to not only lay that foundation themselves, but also to understand, with their busy days that they have and all the other things that parents have to worry about what your child, what kind of information your child is getting from school. Dr. Menzies, how do you address that issue? Trying to figure out what your child is learning in school and balancing it with what you want to share with them.
Right. Excellent points, man. I do not trust the schools to teach my child appropriately about enslavement and racism. And I say that because the person that's doing it may have an underdeveloped perspective of it, and it's likely their perspective is different than mine. And so just like what the other panelists have said, I echo it that, you know, it didn't begin with slavery. Our ancestry does not. And it's not likely that the schools will put the conversation and discussion about slavery and racism within the larger context. I mean, even the new African-American Museum of History and Culture downtown, the basement is where it's all about enslavement. And that's one of the first places our tour guide tried to take us with my children and my wife and I. We went down there. And I would say, no, we're not going downstairs first. We're going upstairs. And it'll be a few years before I take my children downstairs. So I think it's important for us as parents, again, to bring ourselves up to speed and be the ones that contextualize the education that they're going to receive in the school system about their ancestry, enslavement, as well as their broader cultural history. Now, I don't trust the schools to do it, man. And so I double check what my children are learning, and I make sure I build the context around it. I point out the inconsistency. I point out the blatant flat out lies, and I also show them how they can approach the classroom learning environment from a competent and empowered position when addressing the teachers and the subjects that they're putting out there.
Dr. Mance, you were going to make a point.
I was just going to say that as parents, we definitely have to be proactive, purposeful, and intentional, just as Dr. Mincy was stating, in that if we think about the disparities that our children are already facing when it comes to discipline at school, just even down to mental health, they're already facing disparities, so they're going to be exposed to these racial events and racial differences. And so when we are proactive and intentional, I think that is part of being a parent. An African-American parent, Black parent, parent of color, however you want to identify yourself, I think it's imperative, is your responsibility to have those conversations, to be intentional about it, and to make sure that you do, as Dr. Mincy was saying, do your work so that you know your history, and so that you can help facilitate the learning process and a balance for your children.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about racism tonight. What do you tell your children about it? How should you address it with your children? Let's talk to Curtis. Curtis, calling from Camp Springs. Curtis, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I just want to say that historically, blackface was the number one form of entertainment in this country. It was so popular, in fact, that Al Jolson was picked to be the first actor in the speaking movie. He was so great at it. But another thing I want to say, that all over the world, that their kids that walk over bodies to get around where they live at. And we shouldn't worry about traumatizing our kids when the reality of the rest of the world is definite destruction. So I don't think we should sugarcoat it or baby it, you know, but we need to tell them the truth and tell them the facts. But just crying and whining about blackface, it's just crying and whining. But that's my opinion.
Thank you so much. What do you think about that, Dr. Williams?
I'm glad that the caller brought up the history of blackface. It's one that gives us an opportunity to think about what this is and the implications of it in the contemporary moment. The historical relevance of blackface is you saw white people darkening their faces and ironically projecting all of their fears, their anxieties, their anger onto black bodies because they couldn't do it for themselves. So that was like psychologically, emotionally, socially, culturally what they were doing. They were blackening their faces because all of the things that they were worried about in terms of how do I make it in this place? What happens with the denial of the American dream for me? How do I deal with the capitalist system that won't let me in? They would blacken their faces, perform their fear and their anxiety. So in this moment, we have the opportunity to tell our children, blackface has this historical context that revolves around people wanting to be who you are in some ways, even if it is about fear. So it gives us the opportunity to talk about everything that goes around that. What is this anxiety that they're projecting onto black bodies? And then the second point I think that the caller made is equally relevant. I can remember the first semester after the Michael Brown shooting, the first year students at Howard were devastated, which was somewhat surprising to me. I didn't grow up, needless to say, you know, in the civil rights movement, but I grew up in an all-black town where there was plenty of conversation about it. But what became clear in that moment was those students were alive when Trayvon Martin was killed, but they thought it was a fluke. They didn't recognize it as systemic racism. And so when Mike Brown got killed, for them, that was a threat to their identity and their being. And you saw the shift. Numbers at HBCUs are going up because people don't want to have to deal with identity issues in that moment or racial discrimination in that moment when they should be free to establish themselves.
Need to take a break. When we come back, more of this conversation about what do you tell your children about racism? How should you address it with them? Lines are open. We're still taking your call. Stephanie from Alexandria, we're going to talk to you next. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We continue this conversation on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're asking, what do you tell your children about racism? What should you tell them? How should you address it with them? My guests are Dr. Dana Williams, Interim Dean of the Howard University Graduate School and Professor of African American Literature, Dr. Jashawn Mance, Clinical Psychologist and Professor here at Howard University's Department of Psychology, and Dr. Jeff Menzie, Clinical Child Psychologist and Lead Consultant at Mind on the Matter. Lines are still open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stephanie, calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
I was listening in, and one of the doctors is mentioning, about how we have to be very careful about how we, how we approach the subject of racism with our children, and, you know, we don't want them to be traumatized. And, you know, I was just thinking to myself and back to my own childhood. I'm 50 years old, and, growing up and watching Roots, and, you know, I didn't feel traumatized. You know, I feel as though our children need to know. They need to know the truth. They need to know the truth of our history, because obviously history repeats itself. And, I don't think we should sugarcoat it. No, I don't think, it should be, drilled into them and grilled into them. But I think that we should hold, I don't think that we should hold back our history and, feel as though the kids are not able to handle it. I didn't feel traumatized.
How old are you, Stephanie?
I'm 50 years old.
Okay, so when you saw Roots, did you see it in 1977, or how old were you when you saw it?
Yeah, probably around 1970. I saw it when it first came out.
Okay.
Let's say that, yes.
Interesting.
When it first came out.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing, because I saw it in 1977, too, and I was very traumatized. We sat down, my entire family sat down, mom, dad, sister. My sister's 4 years younger than I am. I'm 54. So I was 13 when Roots came out. And I was very traumatized. And my parents allowed me to be traumatized, because my father was raised in the South, mother raised here in D.C., both of them, proud graduates of HBCUs. And so you can pass judgment on whether or not that was good or bad. I will say that I'm glad that I got a traumatized understanding of African American history, which goes back to the other point, because everyone here at the table has talked about our proud history, but the reality is, Dr. Menzie, and I'll start with you, like I said, lynchings and Klan robes and blackface, that's part of our history. That's nothing to be proud of. Some of that stuff is traumatizing. And you can lay the foundation in the history, but the things that we've been talking about this week have nothing to do with a quote-unquote proud history. That stuff is horrifying. Mm-hmm.
And just so I can make a point of clarification.
Go ahead.
When I say be careful and be intentional not to traumatize, I'm not saying to sugarcoat anything.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is to be responsible in how you introduce this. Like, for example, I would never show my children at their current ages the picture of a lynched man burnt to a crisp with his arms and legs severed, right? I'm not going to take them up to the Blacks and Wax Museum and show them the jars with pickled body parts and pickled fetuses in them.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that is a part of the history and the legacy of racism, as a responsible parent that understands what psychological trauma can produce in a child, I'm going to be responsible about how I introduce that. I'm not sugarcoating anything. Anybody that knows me knows I don't put sugar on anything, right? And so that's what I'm saying when I say that. Now, as far as our proud cultural history, as one of the other doctors mentioned earlier, this is just a sliver. This is a slice in time as far as our historical record is concerned. And but just like it only takes a moment for somebody to become totally paralyzed, you know, we have sustained an injury based on this experience, and it's a very deep injury. And so part of teaching our historical legacy that goes beyond the plantation, I'm talking about some of the great civilizations on the continent of Africa, mm-hmm. from the East Coast and the Nile Valley to Timbuktu in the West and the Ghana Empire. What we can teach the thoroughness and how great and mighty our civilizations were during those time periods, and the historical record stands to witness that for us. And what that does is it helps to inoculate and buffer our children's identity, because one of the motivations and one of the goals of racism and white supremacy is to injure the identity of the person so that they can no longer function to their optimal levels. In fact, Dr. Francis Cress Weldon calls it functional inferiors. Mm-hmm. And one of the goals is to create functional inferiors out of us. And so if you inoculate them with the historical richness of their legacy and their ancestry, racism is less likely to impact them on that deep of a level.
Okay. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I believe this is Farash or Farach calling from Southeast D.C. Farouk, hey, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I think it's important that we do articulate this history, and I think it's important that we stop, and sugarcoating probably isn't the expression, but we have to call, as we look at what has happened with the Jewish history, and they expose all the atrocities of what it is that their people have gone through, we need to learn from that and see how that can be used to help us understand that we have the tenacity and the ability to overcome the crazy circumstances that we've been through and still are going through. And I reflect on Dr. Martin Luther King's speech when he talked about he's afraid he's integrating us into a burning house. And I think that's where we are. And we have to recognize that these people are predators. And as long as we recognize them as predators, we therefore have to have an exit strategy. We have to have a way to get out from up under and away from a predator. No prey wants to live amongst this predator. But we seemingly have decided to figure out how can we live amongst them and make it okay and hope that one day this vicious predator will change and become nice to us. This is a predator. We need to identify it as it is. We need to talk about it. And we don't need to talk about it where we shame ourselves. We need to talk about it where we criminalize them and their viciousness. Mm. So that those of us who, you know, understand the importance of that history and that history being a game changer for us, let's change what we're doing going forward.
Okay.
We can't continue to live amongst this vicious.
Well, thank you, Farouk. Now, here's the difficulty. I understand the spirit of what he's saying, but and this is for both Dr. Williams and Dr. Mance. And Dr. Mance, I'll let you start with this. How do you teach your children about the horrors of black history without them hating white folks? Mm. It's particularly when your children may go to school with them. And if they don't go to school with them, they see them at the mall. And if they don't see them at the mall, then eventually they will go to school with them if they are not blessed to go to an HBCU. And let us say you do have all kinds of ethnic and racial backgrounds at HBCUs. It's not just black folks. So you can't be a black person in America without running into a white person. And if we follow exactly what Farouk is saying, that could be problematic.
That's an excellent point. I want to start off by introducing the terms racial socialization and racial preparation. So the idea of racial socialization is how do we socialize our children to be prepared for racial events, racism, racial acts that they may encounter. So the way that we do that may be the preparation of how does one respond. And so kind of reflecting on what Dr. Williams was talking about in relation to her students and how they responded to Trayvon Martin and how they responded to the killing of Michael Brown, is essentially what I heard was a lot of students not knowing how to respond to this shock, right? So it was almost like this race-based stress and race-based trauma that they were experiencing through the media, but because some of them may not have necessarily experienced it themselves, but that racial socialization takes place very early on as parents being, again, intentional and purposeful about how you introduce. But how do you make sure that other ethnicities and races are not the enemy is, again, essentially telling the truth in an age appropriate. I'm going to express that age appropriate. Age appropriate doesn't mean that you're sugarcoating. Age appropriate is making sure that your child is able to process what you are explaining to them and that you are not doing more harm and damage because you already have a society that is essentially a harsh world. Mm-hmm. It's a very harsh world, and it's sometimes a very hostile world towards them just because of who they are, the color of their skin, just because of their presence. So, again, I'm going to go back to that balance of having them to have exposure and letting them being able to have commune, if you will, with other races and ethnicities. Let them ask questions. Let them have friends of other races and ethnicities. So that's one way to kind of having the exposure so that they may be angry and let them know that it's okay to be angry, because guess what? There's nothing really, when we think about the history and the depth of that history, because when we think about racism, it runs long, it runs deep, and it's not something that we can just sugarcoat and say this is all warm and fuzzy about. It's painful.
Yeah,
it is a trauma. And we have to recognize that that trauma can even penetrate through our people that we pass along from intergenerationally. We pass along that pain and that hurt in certain, and it manifests in certain aspects of our behavior. But how do we make sure that we're not teaching hate, if you will, is by making sure that we expose our children to other races and ethnicities, to other cultures. If you have the resources to be able to travel, travel. If you cannot travel physically, there's a book. There's books. Mm-hmm. There's books. There's resources to read and discuss.
And don't forget
museums,
the internet.
The internet, yes. Absolutely.
You know,
the internet.
You know you've got a professor here. She said books.
books.
Dr. Williams, same thing. How do you keep them from hating white people when these issues that come up have to do with historically white people hating black people?
I think you have to be very direct, to be honest with you. I think you have to be very clear that hate isn't an appropriate response to any circumstance. I can remember very clearly some of the work that I've done with folks in the Black Arts Movement were very clear in saying, we promised that we would not do to other people what has been done to us. We will treat them like human beings. And so I had a conversation with my nephew who goes to a predominantly white school, overwhelmingly so, even the faculty. And there was an instance where you had three students who were wearing Confederate shirts. And then, of course, you have the racial incidents that are happening now. So what that experience taught me was children are incredibly resilient. So he's in high school. The younger nephew is fourth grade. But talking to both of them individually, you have to trust them. And that was something that was really surprising to me. I was so angry. I was livid. And so the first thing I had to do was calm down and say, tell me what you think about this. And so I'm thinking about very practical solutions, really. And as the aunt, I can do that in ways that their parents weren't even able to. So figure out who can talk to them that they will talk to, because they'll tell you everything that you want to know. How did that make you feel? And I was really surprised that he said they do stupid stuff all the time. Talking about these kids very specifically, they have been in trouble before. I think they're trying to egg people on. It's problematic because I understand the history. They're talking about it's pride, and it's not just pride. I know what it is, but I know that they're just silly people. So then we could move into the conversation about systemic racism. And then we could move into the conversation about when the Native American gentleman was on the National Mall and the kids were mocking. And it was an interesting conversation because he's like, I didn't understand the mockery. I said, let me explain to you why it was problematic. Would you do this under these circumstances? Would you stand with that look on your face, that smirk, to talk to an elder? And his answer was no. So we can quibble about the language, but what you have to understand is you will not, under any circumstances, participate in systemic discrimination and racism.
I need to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk to George from D.C. And when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more about what you shared as it relates to white privilege, because that's really what you were talking about, an attitude and the reality of it, which also has its roots in racism. George, hang on. We're going to talk to you next. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay, so this message is for Sprint customers only. Check it out. Did you know that you can download the Next Radio app for free? That's right, you can download the Next Radio app for free. Sprint was the first carrier to bring this cool new app to you. It provides a new format to listen, see, and interact with local radio stations. The Next Radio app is unique as it unlocks the FM chip in the phone, so it uses 3 times less battery and 20 times less data. That means you can start listening to your favorite station to hear the newest songs by all of your favorite artists. So if you're a Sprint customer, it's easy for you. It's already preloaded, so all you gotta do is tap the app and download it so it can sync with your location. Visit Google Play and download the free Next Radio app today. Start listening to live local radio on the go only with Next Radio.
I was 11 years old at my first national championships. I fell I don't know how many times.
Michelle Kwan is the most decorated figure skater in U.S. history.
When I had a dream, my dream came true because I dedicated myself.
Dedication made Michelle Kwan a champion.
I was passionate about something and I made sure that I worked hard for it.
And dedication can make your dreams a reality.
Whatever your dream and goals are, they can come true.
Dedication. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
This is Harold Fisher. Got a question or comment for the Daily Drum and can't get through? Follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR and send it to me before, during, or after the program. Always on, always connected.
Do you need expert advice from successful business leaders on how to start, grow, and finance your business? Tune in every Thursday to the Small Business Report on Sirius XM Channel 141 HUR Voices with your hosts Carl Brown and Sharon Morton. Carl and Sharon will talk to experts around the country, giving you the advice you need to start and grow a successful business. The Small Business Report, giving you the tools you need to succeed. Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sirius XM Channel 141 HUR Voices.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about racism and what you tell your children about it. How do you address it with them? I want to go back to the phone lines. George, calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on. George, what's on your mind?
Yes. Now, number one, let me mention this. I'm from the baby boomer era. I went to Vietnam in 1967-68, and I met a lot of Caucasians that were there from different parts of the United States, and some of them were racist, and some of them had their views about black folks, and they kind of had distanced themselves. But then the teaching or your youth, I hear a lot of youth today, and this is 2019 now, and I hear some of them on the buses and different and travels through the communities saying, oh, hey, this is my nigga. I said, oh, you know what? First of all, one brother woke up one time to me about a couple of years ago. So I said, hold it. There's nothing positive about that word, that stigma about the Negro came from nigger. That's what's put on a black person. It meant nothing good, positive. It was something bad, derogatory, nasty, dirty, ignorant, backwards. And I said, you know what? Don't refer to that. I'd rather you call me anything else but that. Don't refer to that. Because that was something that to teach our youth this, these young people today, in their teens or middle school, high school, and some of them maybe college age, you know, about teaching them about racism. I said, you know, I didn't hate anybody, but like I said earlier, I just despise the actions of a lot of Caucasians.
Yeah.
And the things that they stand for. When it comes to us, because our people have struggled for so long, we've always been the underdog and always been put back in the end. We watch some of the pictures, we're put back. We have to teach our children, sit down and you say, how do we teach them about that? Listen, first of all, I go gut.
George, I got to let you go because I've got more to talk about. But thank you so much for sharing with me. One of the things we were talking about beforehand, we were talking about that confrontation between the high school student from Kentucky and the Native American elder and confrontation. And a lot of people don't understand not all racism is Klan robes and blackface. Sometimes it is the ignorance of white privilege. And I want you to give me a brief 101 on that, Jeff, Dr. Menzie. Explain to those who still are wrestling with that incident and what and how it is rooted in racism.
Thanks, Harold. This ties in also to what the caller said about how Jewish people disclose the entirety of their experience. There's a certain element of privilege that's in place that allows people to do certain things and get away with it that will not allow other people to do so. In this particular situation, we're talking about white privilege. And white privilege protects white people and gives them the ability to move through society like no other race can, strictly based upon their whiteness and the systems that whiteness has constructed. And so when you're looking at the little white kid from Northern Kentucky in the face of that indigenous American and First Nations elder, what you see in that smirk on his face is exactly what you see manifesting now when you have him now launching lawsuits against anybody who talks bad about him. And so that's a part of white privilege, is that you can offend somebody, right? And then because they were offended and because you were criticized about that offense that you actually created, you are allowed to now profit through civil suit, you know, saying that they defamed you for calling you out. And so white privilege is an outgrowth of racism. It's how racism actually sustains itself. It allows for white folks to continue to be racist, right, and not to experience the penalty that should come from committing hate crimes, such as intimidating people based on their race and their culture, physically assaulting people because of their race and their culture. It's like why Liam Neeson right now is on Good Morning or whatever morning show he was on, and he's able to take his stance and explain himself. And people are actually like, yeah, we support that. Or why the governor of Virginia, you know, can have evidence of being in blackface, but all of the scrutiny now is being shifted towards the lieutenant governor, who is his potential predecessor or his potential successor. And so that's what white privilege does. It buffers and it protects white folks for continuing to be racist in their actions and in their attitude.
Thank you, Dr. Menzie. Let's talk a little bit about the flip side of this, about possible solutions and educating, because, you know, there's this story that is out of North Carolina where there was a 10-year-old boy who took a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance, as we have seen Colin Kaepernick do when he was playing for the NFL, and so many other people obviously protesting racial injustice in America. It's one thing for, you know, black people to do it, whether you're talking about the 1968 Olympics and raising a fist or taking a knee now. But when you begin to have white people do it, and specifically white children, is that progress, Dr. Mance? Because somebody told him something, or he learned something, or he has been listening to something. He's just woke, or mini woke, because he's only 10. almost woke.
I'll definitely identify it as a step, at least. The fact that we're having children that can willing to understand and empathize and to be an ally. And being able to teach our children about what allies are. And I think that's one way of kind of going back to that question you were asking of not how not to hate all white people, is essentially to kind of identify that there are white people who have fought with us and along with us. And so identifying allies and also seeing the young man's gesture as some sense of the right step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your thoughts about that, Dr. Williams?
I think first, as parents and adults, we have to educate ourselves so that we can explain our positions to other people, both of the race and outside of the race, to help people understand why certain things are offensive. Because I've actually heard conversations, you know, about like why blackface is offensive, and particularly since these were quote unquote homages of sorts, you know, one wanting to be Michael Jackson, the other wanting to be Curtis Blow. you know, forget about the culture vulturism that's associated. So I think we have to educate ourselves so that we can have adult conversations that we can have amongst ourselves, and then be able to have our children have those conversations as well. And Black people shouldn't have to explain themselves and explain away discrimination. I'm clear about that. But
what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't think that, you know, we should be the people who, we shouldn't have to save people or get people's foot off of our necks, like nonviolently, if you will. So someone's foot is on your neck, and so you're now responsible for convincing them that the foot on the neck is a bad thing. I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I think you first get the person up off of you, and then if they're willing to have a conversation about why it's problematic, if they honestly don't know, I don't have any way of knowing whether or not they knew that it was bad. The thing that I'm concerned about now, especially, is that there's so many people who have been in blackface. Is this going to be like normal? And so I've seen everything from it'd be easier to say who hasn't done it to, well, okay, two people having been involved in this means that it's a, you know, a normal thing. All of these conversations, I think, point to the thing that racism is systemic, and until we gut it completely. And I don't know. So I'm still like grappling with some of the things that the caller Farouk said a little bit earlier about whether or not we can revise this American project. Very often, I don't think that it can be redeemed because there hasn't ever been the truth part of the reconciliation. Can we really reconcile with allies and other people if the truth element isn't there anymore? So I think a big part of the solution for me is the truth element has to be there. And I want Black people to be able to have that truth conversation amongst ourselves first, and then begin to take that conversation out, because no one else is going to do it. We know we can't count on the school systems to do it. We can't count on the government to do it. We can't even count on the culture to do it.
I think that is such a critical point. To put it, you know, flat-footed and plain-spoken, what you are talking about is not just having Black folks understand where they're coming from, but to have, you know, white people and other cultures unlearn the green grass, white picket fence version of history that they have learned mm-hmm. about Black people in America.
Yeah, and we saw that with the Trump election. I think that's a big part of it. I mean, ultimately, people voted against their own interests because the only thing they knew was that they were not Black. Their only identifying marker is, well, at least we're not them, whatever that means. So I think people will do whatever they need to do to buy into a certain mythology. And we just have to be really careful about perpetuating this narrative and this notion of American exceptionalism and democracy. So, you know, for the State of the Union, when the president mocks the fact that, you know, America will never be a socialist country and has a very narrow definition of what socialism is, then all I could see in that moment, even as Stacey Abrams tried to unravel it, bless her heart, but all I could see in that moment was just the reinscription of this American narrative that really is rooted in and sustains white supremacy.
I'll let you have the final word, Dr. Mance. Your thoughts.
It's very interesting because one of the things I was thinking is that I think it's very difficult when you look for the oppressor for your liberation. It's very, very difficult and problematic, but I do understand what the system that we lived in and the institutional racism as that's been discussed. But part of kind of asking whether we want to identify allies and kind of letting them understand their privilege, but knowing that you're asking for a group of people to release their privilege, and they're not going to want to do that. They're not going to release
that
privilege.
Because doing that would be extremely, extremely painful.
Exactly.
Sometimes the truth hurts.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it hurts them, and sometimes it hurts our children, but all for the benefit of everyone. Dr. Jeff Menzies, Dr. Jashawn Mance, and Dr. Dana Williams, thank you so much for talking to us. I really appreciate this.
Thanks for the conversation.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, February 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.